so that you have these various special interest groups. In other words, some people are interested in radiation. We know that X-ray can produce cancer. I mean, the virus theory. The problem is that these theories come up and are very part, and then we go down. You see, at the moment, in our particular field, as far as we know, this particular approach toward changing the chemistry of the fluid around the cell, influencing that cell to become a malignant cell, is not being done. We read a paper at the International Cancer Research Congress a year ago. It was in Florence, and the meeting lasted a week. And there were no papers at that time, except ours, emphasizing that approach. We wish there were. And we're only hoping now that I'm getting older, my associate is, that somebody would pick it up from here. Because we know we're not going to go on forever. And we do have confidence in what we're doing. And the response has been very enthusiastic. But everybody's busy in his own little valley. And we can't find anybody who would just move in from there. It's so simple that it sometimes frightens us. You know, simply by changing the degree of acidity or alkalinity around a cell, you can change the whole metabolism.
And make it malignant.
Or hold it back a little. Now there is a thing called, there's a time period in all of this. And that's what makes it such a problem. It's called the latent period. From the time a cell is subjected to a chemical that would make it malignant, until that cell becomes malignant, there is a time. Because cells adjust themselves. A normal cell, whether it's an animal cell or a plant cell, they have a great power to adjust to changes in their environment. Now, if you change the environment of cells, we grow these cell cultures, it's very easy. Many cells can't adjust, and they die. But always others survive. And it's in the surviving cells that these changes toward cancer occur. It is. And then we can take those cells and put them in an animal, and the animal grows the cancer, which is the final proof anyway.
What kinds of animals do you use?
Well, it depends on what we're doing. I would say, we have mice, white rats, rabbits.
Is it unusual for your kind of research to be carried on in a hospital rather than unaffiliated with a medical school?
Yes.
It's atypical in the medical world.
Yes.
Does this isolate you more from
it? Doesn't isolate us more from it. It really, in a sense, helps us because we're not bound by establishment. That sounds funny. But there is such a thing as establishment. I think sometimes that we are faulted a little bit because if a piece of research comes out of a university or a hospital connected, it is, I think, a little more likely to be accepted by a publisher than if it comes out of an institution which is not research-related. Now, members of our staff teach at the University of Pittsburgh, clinical, the pathology teachers, you know, clinical and dermatologists and so on. But as far as research is concerned, ours is rather unique. Allegheny General is also unique because over there, the Singer Memorial Laboratories has always been a research institution. Research is very expensive. Allegheny General had some wonderful grants, helped public health for a long time. We were, as I've told you, partially supported. But you're quite right in your question. It's a little more difficult to get to a publisher if you're not a professor.
What happens when the grant money runs out? Who do you turn to then?
Well, we're just getting near the line now of being desperate. Research is expensive. We limit ours, we count the number of test tubes. 15 years ago, the attitude over the whole world, particularly in this country, is if you put in for a grant, ask for twice as much as you know you need at least. And then you'll get within range. Well, we didn't do that. We figured how much we needed. We sent it in. We were naive in this whole business. When our grant dies, the hospital will carry us partway. People have been quite generous, individuals. It's very difficult for either one of us to go around and ask for money. I could go and try to get you a job tomorrow, but I can't ask any of myself. People have birthdays, Christmas, anniversaries, somebody dies, and they send in a set of flowers, you know, checks earmarked to our search. The hospital has been wonderful with us, and so we manage. We can't take on any more help. We have to leave some help go. But this is universal. And I can tell you, though we're devoting too much time to this phase, that there's a very famous man, Zent Gyorki. That's a Hungarian. Zent Gyorki is at Woods Hole over near the Cape, where we He's done some of the most brilliant work in basic chemical research. He has a staff of 40. He is a world authority. He had the Nobel Prize about 8 or 9 years. 3 years ago, he got a letter from the National Institutes of Health that his grant was cut. Now, Zent Gyorki gets his grant cut. I'm not going to live like 400. My. It's national, probably national. And unfortunately, when the preceding president made this announcement of how much was it, 500 billion or something, for cancer research, it didn't get off. Mm-hmm. And one does need funds to carry on research.
How large a staff do you have?
Narrowed down. We have a tech, we have the four.
Do you want to comment at all on your practice of internal medicine? What it was like in between 1920 and 1970?
First of all, it's difficult for me because I think you can see by now that I'm not the kind of person, right or wrong, to say, well, when I was a young man, you know, I hear that all the time, we just work 8 hours. We work 22 and I, you know, who cares what they think? And so I'm on the side of the other side of the fence. Though I know I'm young, you know. I would say, well, first of all, it's time for small. Do you want to say like the city of Pittsburgh?
Well, this is where you practice.
Yeah, okay. First of all, house calls were the routine. You devoted so many hours a day to house calls. Tell you, girls, the contrary, right? That was part of your work. You devoted either, well, X hours, morning or afternoon, or evening. I was quite early affiliated with the West Penn. Hospital practice was quite different. Patients were not nearly adjusted to going to the hospital. They had to be awful sick just to reverse this event. For surgery, you had to talk them into going. For medicine, heart or pneumonia, any of them, they wanted to be treated as sick. They were afraid of hospitals. Hospitals were places to, not like in the 1890s, but we still inherited some of that. You were awful, awful sick if you went to the practice of medicine in Pittsburgh, looking back, was good. At the University of Pittsburgh, It was just, I think, moving from to the buildings when I came back from Arizona. They had a splendid faculty, and most of the faculty I just met because they were older, better doctors, and so you met them, had their private practices as well as teaching. Today, as you know, universities have full-time men who are on a consulting basis. I would say Pittsburgh was no different than any other big city, except for one reason. There was a time, even when I came here, that if you could afford it, and you had some rather vague disease, and you weren't getting anywhere, the pressure was on you or your family or friends to go to Philadelphia, New York, Boston, the Mayo Clinic, or Cleveland. Now, the big change is, though those are great institutions, and I know them, there's less of them. And that's because there's greater expertise in this. Pittsburgh is full of very brilliant, fine clinicians, and is thus delivering, I think, wonderful health. So that was one trend that was quite different. Some of the fields have been opened up. When I came to Pittsburgh, I brought a guest. There might have been, three or four psychiatrists. And those psychiatrists were also neurologists. Today the town is full of psychiatrists. And not nearly enough neurologists, if you know the differential that I make. The various specialties were covered quite well. Surgery is another field when I came. There were two men who, in addition to being general surgeons, were qualified and were able in neurosurgery. Today, they were excellent. So, and, of course, the cardiovascular, the heart and blood vessel surgery, that's grown everywhere. And right here in Pittsburgh, we have a great man. You may know one of our men. I'm not going to name names, I'm going to say. And we've invented a new heart valve. Now, over in Hungary, we're making a speech about it. So the medicine has grown. Mm-hmm. That's enough of that, isn't it?
Is the increased specialization a good thing? From the family doctor point of view.
I was never a family, in a funny way, I never did pediatrics. Mm-hmm. I never, I never did gynecology or obstetrics. I just did internal medicine, which is of itself.
So you were specialist.
Subspecialty. Has specialization been a deterrent? Is that what you
said? I asked the other way around, did you see it as a good thing in the development of medicine?
Yes. But now, of course, as you know, they're trying so hard to give new names to the old family doctor, family practice, and all of this. So they're making it very tempting. And there's a strange thing happening, though I have not been at the university. West Penn's always been a teaching hospital. In other words, we're obligated to teach every day, practically. So I talked to many students and many interns, residents, and so on. There's a great tendency now, just beginning to move in the last few years, the young girls and boys graduate from the hospital and going into small communities for family practice. They just don't like the cities. They don't want to raise kids in the cities. They like to be not too far away from the cities. They take their accreditation. They like to go to meetings in the city, but they have a thing. They like to practice. This isn't universal, but there is that trend. And I think that's wrong. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, these boys and girls have to work so hard. They may have to make a call to the east, 30 miles, and then a call to the west, 20 miles. And
at, least at least they have an automobile, not a horse and buggy.
Right.
It's easier than it was.
Yes, that I agree.
Well, to change the subject, do you want to tell us anything of your travels and kinds of things you used to do for summer vacations?
Right, that's simple. this. For about 26 years, Jane and I went to a fishing club up in Northern Canada. Not a fishing camp. A log cabin with an outside foot, you don't call a club. Huh?
Right.
And you shared that outside job with the chipmunks and the porcupine. It was a lovely little fishing camp up there.
Were you up there just the two of you?
We went, no. It was a group of people, some from Camp Toronto, and strange enough, some from Pittsburgh. And we were taken up by the father of a dear friend of mine, and he and his wife and Jane just picked up about the same time each year.
How long did you stay?
A month.
A month at a time.
You squeeze it every now and then for another week. And I still hear from my old friends up there. We've been up to the weddings of their kids in Toronto. And just recently I had a phone call from a fishing friend who now lives in Butler. We've kept up our little group. Oh, yes. And you fished or you had picnics out on the islands or the lakes and you went swimming. What is it?
Are you an expert fisherman?
My Jane was. I did the talking. She got the big fish. Now, then, after that, we'd gone there so many years, and we had such dear friends, but it got to the point where we'd just gone there too long. Mm-hmm. We had the main lodge. There was a cook that we had, but they had all summers, and high school kids to do some of the rough work, because I think it's foolish for a gal to go away for a vacation and have to do all the cooking and clean the place. Ours was only a one-room cabin, but anyhow. Mm-hmm. And so we had visited over on the Cape a few times briefly. And so about 15 years ago, a guy with me comes out, we went over to Cape Cod at East Dennis. And the last years, until Jane died, that's when.
Did you do much traveling to Europe after the pre-war trips with your family?
No, listen, Jane and I, about three or four years. One was for postgraduate work in Vienna, which was a beautiful excuse to go to Europe.
How long were you there? Yeah.
Was
that a year?
About 3 months. No. You mean in Vienna?
Uh-huh.
4 months. It was a quick postgraduate. Yes, we had about four trips, and as you guys may know, we always put off the last two. We wanted, Jane was very enthusiastic, and we read so much about Yugoslavia. That was at Rebecca West, like my own great friend. She started once a year. We never got there. We started out for Greece and never got there. But that's it. We were funny travelers, and that I like to go to places to stay, not 3 days before this.
So you didn't do the grand tour?
Nope. As a matter of fact, not that your machine figures, the next to the last trip, I had an appointment in Stockholm, where wonderful cancer research. We had been in
Norway, Denmark.
We'd been in Denmark and fell in love with it. We would go to Finland when I was finished in Sweden. We thought, oh, that's kind of silly. So we went back to Copenhagen for another 10 days. That's my way. Well, we saw enough of the fine old art. And there again, these were wonderful trips to see the real masterpieces in their locale. Now, of course, now we have in New York and here, and certainly in Chicago, and now out on the West Coast, and in Washington. All that good. We used to go around there and see that stuff. Some of those early them, or early matches, to see them in the, you know, mm-hmm. after all, you're pretty lucky if you can go to Amsterdam to see Rembrandt's house, the original press, and so on. So we had fun. What a fun.
Have you been involved in any community activities not associated with the American press?
I said that at the beginning, but I have been very lax. Has to be no. Mm-hmm. What are the activities?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Well, I don't go. I belong, of course. I don't go. What are the other communities?
There are various sorts of civic associations which sometimes take people's time.
No, I don't. Minor matters. Yeah. Or research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You might want one thing that you set up. All doctors are health professionals. You know, belong to a list. Well, it's kind of foolish to give you the whole list, but if you want a few, as medical background,
mm-hmm.
now you know every doctor has to be a member of the, or is a member, the Allegheny County Medical Society, that's the state, you know, and the American. I'm also licensed in this state, that's a California form. I'm also a member, I know I'm going to forget one, of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Of the I'm a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts and Science. Your machine's running, I'm just thinking.
That's
fine. You're laughing. No, I'm thinking, what else would you be? Now, I gave up. Because I don't believe in being having your name on something in which you're inactive. As I lost interest in this or that, you know, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I swear, unless I've lost looked at something very important. And I'm still a member of the staff of Lutheran Hospital. Though I guess that's emeritus, because I helped write that file.
Do you have any comments that you'd like to make on the Pittsburgh scene now, as contrasted to Pittsburgh when you were growing up?
Oh, well, it's a much more exciting place to live. Much more fun. It's a happier place to live. Certainly a cleaner place. The last time I went out to Phoenix, I was shocked. We came down out of the air, that airport out there, and there was a blanket of smog and fog, worse than when we used to come in driving into Pittsburgh from the east. It's a noisy. They'll like me for that. They'll take my license away.
Chamber of Commerce will hire you.
Mm-hmm.
Chamber of Commerce will hire
you
out there.
But really, Pittsburgh is, and of course, I like season changes. I don't like slush and snow, but really. Those years out in Southern California, and I like the seasonal change very much. And so I like it here. I would just stay there, though it has its limitations. But you dream about what you used to, you know. I can daydream about the far west and the Flapper cowboys, and I've treated a lot of these cowboys, and I've heard million stories. You know, because they're funny guys. You know, and that's how I learned to ride.
Because did you get to travel?
The deputy sheriff. He got to ride a horse.
Yeah.
Well, no, the children of my friends are so funny. But we're off the same thing. This one little girl. This is our friend. This one little girl. Not that much different. The tempo was slower. You know, there were more horses and carriages. or slow trolley cars. I remember when I was a little boy, we lived in Lawrenceville, we bucked downtown on a horse drawn.
How long did that take?
Oh, maybe an hour. Just as slow, but you've seen pictures of the horse. Well, I remember that, and I also remember when trolleys came in. But isn't that no different here, actually, than if you read the history of many big cities? I was never particularly interested in the politics of our era as a young woman. So I can't comment on that. Our temple was a very active one down at 8th Street in the Penn Avenue, across from the fire station. It's more, I remember when I remember about the services. What else was there?
Were religious observances?
Part of, yes. Yes, we were pretty, my grandfather was a pretty religious man. They observed the holidays. They observed often 2 days of the holiday. Not my father, my grandfather. We never observed the food rule, whatever you call it.
The kosher.
We never observed that. Though I think my grandmother and my grandfather might have tended that way. But there were none of those different sets of dishes and so on. Whether they would go out and buy a ham sandwich, I doubt. But there were no differentiation there. The family always had rather nice, small, but very nice houses. They could always, not always, but frequently, when I was growing up, they would have a maid. Vacations were taken.
Where were those vacations taken?
Chautauqua Lake. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, Saxonburg up in the country. Sometimes another part of the state. There were not long vacations. My people were very hard working.
Was your grandfather also in the haberdasher business? You mentioned that was your father's business.
That was my father's business, but my grandfather and his son had a men's store, which is now where the big bus station is downtown.
Where the Greyhound bus, the big Greyhound bus terminal.
Yes, but at Penn Avenue, not Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the new Civic comes up. But they were never, they observed the holidays. My father observed the fast, the Yom Kippur. I speak of the other grandfather and mother because my father's father and mother died actually before I was born, you see. So
this was your grandfather Arnfeld who had the men's store?
Right. No, my, the one downtown.
The downtown one downtown was the grandfather Arnfeld?
That's right. And his son. They observed growing, but Alma said, not true religiously, but I think my father would go to Rabbi Levy's Sunday morning services, which were then down on 8th Street, because he enjoyed hearing lectures more than a religious experience.
Did you know your other grandparents at all?
No.
Not at all. They were still, I guess they never came to the States.
They had died in Germany. Mm-hmm. They died in Germany. We have some pictures.
Did your grandparents Arnfeld also come from Germany?
Yes.
Do you know where? The town?
Oh, come on. We had all that in that little family. My grandmother, I wrote, who sat like people.